I look forward every year at this time when the Morals are here to be with us. I have heard it said that truly great people don't even realize that they are great. They just see themselves as somebody very busy doing a job that's bigger than they are. Well, this is certainly true of our guest today, Tom Morrill. In my eyes, he will go down in the history books as another David Livingston to the area of Zambia. That's the work that they've done. Stop and think about it. There's now 31 babies that would be dead were it not that God called the Morrill family to go over there, and they went, not knowing where they were going or what they were doing, but they went. And today we have an extra treat as well because Tom's mother, Joanne Lepo, is with us. So I'm going to shut up and let Tom have the floor.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Hello, testing, 1, 2, 3.
All right. So, good afternoon or good morning, everybody. Some of you know me from a few years ago and actually years and years ago, and some of you don't. But I think last year, everybody remembers Amy, my wife, my better half. She was here, and she was sharing a lot of things. And I have a lot of things to say today. So I got about 45 minutes, and I'm going to run through it as fast as I can, because I can sit and talk for like hours and hours and hours about all the things that are happening. Because just in just in 1 year, it's like a whole lifetime. Thousands of things, lots of miracles happened. So many incidences that are great and powerful and great testimonies, but I have to kind of shove it all into place. So what we're going to do is I want to first show the video, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit about some things that we saw in the video. So if we can go ahead and hit those lights. And I think Amy showed the video last year, right? She did? Very good. Okay. Here we go. Let's hit this play button twice. There it goes. One. There we go. All right, now I'm going to talk about a few things. Oh, might be too loud for some of you guys. Just drop it down a little bit. That okay back there? Good? Okay, that's 2010, 2011, 2012, 13, 14. We've been there 9 years, almost 10 years just in this village, but 14 years in Zambia. Hey, that's our orphanage. There's Henry. Yeah.
We worked hard this year to rebuild many of our buildings after the big storm in March.
So you can see all the wood there. We replaced all that wood, took it all off, and we did metal trusses. We want that thing strong.
Since the dining room roof was damaged, we took the opportunity to do an upgrade with metal trusses and stronger roofing sheets that will withstand future storms in Kazembe.
Okay, this is a girls' cottage, and we need it for the girls.
A second big project this year was the construction of a cottage for girls. With our ever-growing population, 30 children now and counting, we needed a place for our big girls to go. Tom designed and helped construct a cute little cottage that is just perfect for 8 girls and their nanny. The girls love their bright and cheerful room.
We'll be making one of these for the boys also, over to the side.
The schooling of our children is going very well. Many of the kids can now read on their own and complete work independently.
That's beauty.
We use a Christian curriculum, which not only allows students to study at their own pace, but also gives them a strong foundation of faith. We have library and educational games areas where the kids love to go when their daily work is done.
So you can see that new classroom there, and that's going to be for the second and third graders and up. And we just need a roof on that.
So I'm standing inside our future classroom, classroom number 2. This is the wall of the first classroom, which right now has all our students, but should be the kindergarten and first grade classroom, a more lively environment where counting and sounding out words and singing songs can be done to help the kids learn to read. Once they learn how to read and can study independently, they will move into this classroom, our elementary classroom. All along the walls of this 30 by 30 foot classroom, we will have individual desks or offices for our students to study in. We use a pace system, so every child learns at their own pace and does their work independently. In the center of the room, the children can take their work to a scoring table to correct their work and make sure it's been done right. And at the end of each booklet, they sit at a testing table and take a test to make sure that they can move on to the next booklet. This classroom is going to be perfect for up to 30 students. And then, in the future, we will have the next classroom. This one should be done in about 3 months. And then next project will be classroom number 3, which will be a multi-purpose classroom. Science experiments, art projects, music lessons will all take place in that classroom. We're very excited about the future of this school.
So we got the kids involved with karate, Shotokan. So they had so much energy. I said, you need to focus your discipline on your energy. I mean, look at that. I'm not training ninjas, you know, to take over. Don't worry. Ninjas! This is Brandon.
Church and Sunday school. We sing songs, play instruments, and learn more about God and His Son Jesus through the Bible. Raising these children up to be strong, godly men and women is one of our primary goals here at Kazembe Orphanage.
Okay, this is now our farm that we have purchased 1 hour south of the orphanage. It's on titled land. Yes, it's Jurassic Park. My son made this. We have 350 banana trees now.
Wow.
Yeah.
The vision for Terra Nova is to create a global village for our children to grow up in, learning about farming, animal care, world cultures, and to get a great education. We're currently getting the farm started with the orchard, the first of many greenhouses, bananas, and other crops. We plan to expand the farm each year. Now we are working on the infrastructure, the roads and the plans for future buildings. The first building is also under construction, a guardhouse which will help us in regulating people coming and going as well as keep the supplies safe. This building is very interesting because we are building it with earth bagging sacks which we filled with clay soil and a small amount of cement and stacked like bricks. This is a strong and economical way to build and also very eco-friendly.
Partner with us at Kazembe Orphanage.
All right. Isn't that great? Yay! So, wasn't that inspiring? Is that great? My son made that video. He's now here in Houston. I'm staying with my mom because he's now turned 18 years old. And he's the last of our six biological children, which we have raised in Africa. We've been there for 14 years. Living in various places, but the last 9 years we've been living in a village. So Troy, who has been there since he was like 4 years old, coming to America is a big shock. It's a culture shock, you know. So he's kind of getting acclimated a little bit, socializing a little bit more. And he's like, where's all the black people? You know, no, they're... I said, they're around, you just gotta look for them, you know. Go to Baytown or somewhere. Anyways, he's doing well. He's been here for now a month, and it's a big thing. It's huge, you know, for him to be here. He was really scared, really uneasy, like back at that village. He was, oh man, I'm going, but I know I need to do this, you know, because he needs to go to college. He needs to go to university. He needs to start his life, all those kind of things. Because our children, they have given their lives for missions, you know. Even before we went to Africa, you know, our kids were doing a nursing home project. I've talked to you a lot about that before. They came up here in the States. You remember that when they came up? You know, and so, and we went to 9/11, helping all the fire department. We did all kinds of stuff. And they were winning souls for the Lord all over the world. And so now they spent all this time in Africa doing that work there and spending time teaching and training all the children. You know, that's great. You know, so I said, okay, now you've done that. Now we're on a different stage now. You now have to go and get some higher learning, go get your associates, bachelor's, master's, whatever it is, whatever you feel. And then maybe you'll find a wife or a husband or something like that and see what that has to do, what's going on with that, you know, and then maybe you want to come back and come back into the field. So I said, just this is a little time for you. This is your time. And, you know, you're not giving up the ministry, but possibly you'll come back. But even their time here between their job and going to college or university, they're still helping people. They volunteer at different places. There's like the pound for the dogs, you know, washing all the dogs. Or they'll go to a camp to help the children, volunteering at a special needs place. You know, they're always doing something to help people. I think at Christmas time they did the refugees that came in. So they were passing out gifts and stuff, working with the organization there. So it's like they were very international. They felt very good to be around foreigners and stuff. It was really nice. So, you know, there's always that embedded into you. And that shows you the importance of raising your children right, you know, because it's going to go down from generation to generation. I mean, you heard about how many generations we've had, you know, people in our time before, from the 1800s all the way to now, where you had to do something, you know. You don't have to be a pastor or a preacher or go for 4 years of Bible seminary and all this stuff. You can do other things, helping people, and your kids are going to see that. And then those kids, when they grow up, they'll have that thing embedded in their hearts to always help out, to always give out to others. That's really, really, really important. That's a foundation that everybody needs and all the kids, your children need. Okay? Then the world will be a better place. You know, so much. So anyways, let's talk about a little bit what happened this year. I think Amy told you a little bit about this big downdraft that came down from the mountain. Whoosh! And it just completely ripped off, I think, three of our roofs. Completely just pulled it off. And even this one area we call the ablution block. It's a British terminology for an area where a lot of toilets are. We have like six toilets with some showers and stuff. Well, the small kids were in there. They were washing their hands. It was like kind of like the afternoon. They were just left to go to the dining room. And then that wind happened, and the whole wall collapsed in that bathroom. If they were there just 5 minutes before, we had some fatalities. The Lord was looking after us. I'm telling you, there's angels at that place. And I always pray for 1 million, 2 million or angels. You know, I just keep on racking it up. You know, anymore, I get, you know, 1 trillion angels around this place. It's like crowded up there, you know. But it's like the Lord's really doing it. And for having so many kids, you know, over 30 kids, let me tell you, the odds of something going wrong is really high for us, you know. But we haven't had one single broken bone yet. Is that amazing or what? And, you know, we have cuts and bruises and all those kind of little things, you know. And we have first aid going on every day, you know. Knock, knock, knock. Mommy, I got a little owie here. Okay, here you go. So, but, you know, the Lord's really protecting us through this whole time. The kids come into our orphanage when they're 2 years or below, because those are the most vulnerable, right? Those are the ones who can die if they don't have the proper nutrition, love, understanding, knowledge, all that put together. And there has been a lot of some children that we could not take for some reason, they have passed on. Now, the thing is that there is 1 million orphans in Zambia. That's an astronomical number. I can't even think about how many orphans there is. And it's all due because of the HIV/AIDS problem that's happening in this world. And there it's like 50%. 50%. That's like 1 in 2, you know, it's like that, or 5 in 10, or whatever you want to say it. But it's like, it's pretty crazy, you know. So the thing is that we have, I think, our children are so amazing and so smart right now and so intelligent that we're so excited for the transformation of these children. You know, when you bring children in, especially orphans, they come from breakup, like families that had problems, the mom died or the dad died, or both, and we call them single or double orphan because of that. And they come in, and maybe they have some trauma going on or thing, and we're like, okay, we're going to have some issues here. But they have progressed, and they have overcome those problems. And then by giving them good nutrition at an early age, baby formula and good vegetables, proper diet, which Amy knows a lot about, is very, very important because that's the developing of the brain. And you need that earlier on. Now, after that, you just pump them in with a lot of knowledge. Lots of things that we have, like with the Montessori and stuff, we teach them. Lots of interaction, lots of love. They call me Daddy. They call Amy Mommy. And every time I walk outside my door, it's Dad! And I said, okay, I'm coming. And we sit down and we talk with them. It's really important that you create that family environment. And because we've learned from the United States from a long time ago, during the World War and World War II, when we had lots of institutions, you know, for orphans. We had like 500 kids in these big, giant mansion things, you know. And a lot of kids were running away, and it was really hard. But we found out, of course, that's not the way to do it. It's now to have foster care throughout the system because we understand that families are so important, that family unit, you know, that closeness, the father figure, the mother figure, siblings. It's really, really important. So that's what we're trying to do. So we're getting away from that big thing, you know, and trying to put everybody as I'm Dad, she's Mom, and we're just one big family, and this is all your brothers and sisters. And so, and it's really working. I'm telling you, when you take some of the siblings that we couldn't have taken before because maybe they're 3 or 4 years old, you can take them up from the village, bring them up, and then you take ours. The difference is night and day. Same genes, same everything, mom and dad, everything. You know, you look into first the one from the village. You can see, you look in their eyes, there's darkness, there's lostness, just black, and there's that stare of just, there's nothing there. They didn't have the good nutrition. They didn't have the wisdom and the knowledge that we're pumping in, the education. They didn't have the love. All that. And then you sit there and go, it's like a flat line. And you try to talk to them, barely speak anything. Now you talk to our kids, you bring our kids up there. Boy, you see that spark. You see that love, that understanding, that inquisitiveness. You see Christ in their eyes. They're happy. They're smiling. There's something there. And I'm telling you, with that, with Christianity, education, love, all that changes a person. It has nothing to do with DNA and all that other stuff. We're showing there it's all environment. That's what it is. And just imagine if we can change all our kids, imagine what the whole country is if they would have used our, our type of format. It would change the whole country completely. And that's one of our goals, is if we can raise all of our 30 children in this type of format, then they are now going to become leaders of tomorrow. You know, just within less than 10 years, we're going to have teenagers, or no, not teenagers, adults. You know, our oldest now is 11 years old. He came when he was 2 years old. It's 9 years he's been with us doing different things. So we have to see about that this is the best thing that we're doing to the kids. We are giving them so much love, so much attention, and that's one of the reasons why the inquisitiveness and they're jumping and everything. That's what we had to do, start doing karate and stuff like that to kind of control them, because they're just like running around sometimes with so much energy. So we had to say, okay, we're going to do this karate thing. Everybody sit down and fold your hands, and we're just going to close our eyes and just, you know, pray or something and just sit there. And it's so amazing when you see all these guys in white clothes and they're just all quiet. I'm like, yes! Quietness. But they need to be able to control. We have some kids that are a little bit more rumptious, you know, a little bit more aggressive, you know, and then ones that kind of being a little bit strong, you know, get into the bulliness a little bit. And I was like, okay, that's natural, that's normal, but let's focus their energies into something. And you need to learn how to control yourself, self-discipline. And so that's why we're doing the karate. And it's really good. It's really been really good for the kids. I get this punching back and I'm like, you know, so it's really good. So so anyways, you can see it. Our outreach is doing great with these kids. They're saved. We have gone so far 4 times through the Bible with these kids. 4 times. You can sit down with these children, the older ones, and you can ask them any question about any story in the Bible, and they will know it, and they'll finish it to you. Isn't that amazing? And it's not only that, but they also know how to apply it to their lives. That's really, really important, you know. It's just not shoving a bunch of knowledge in there, but it's also application, how you can do that. And being saved, that's really important too, receiving Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. They can sit there and explain to you what is sin and all this stuff, and how Jesus comes and washes and takes those sins away from us. It's really, really important. And that's, to me, that's great. I mean, I've seen some kids here in the United States. You ask them all these questions about the Bible or different things. Well, I don't know anything, you know. So it's like, this is really important to create that foundation, that Christian foundation, because we don't want them to have any of this baggage and all this stuff that the locals have, which is all the voodoo and the witchcraft and all the superstition and all that stuff that is actually cultural in the village, or actually in all of Zambia. They don't have any of that. It's completely gone. It's not only that we didn't teach it and show them and all that stuff. It's actually they have conquered it to where they have no fear of that stuff. I think I told you one time when we went out for a little walk, a nature walk, and I was with, and we found this little plate full of these bones and twisted feathers and all this stuff. There's obviously some kind of voodoo that somebody tried to put in somebody's yard. Well, I come and I say, everybody see this? Everybody see this? What is this? And all the kids say, this is voodoo. And they say, yeah. Can this hurt us? No. Why? Because we have Jesus. That's why. Right. And it won't work on us. So I said, come on, let's go. And we walked all over it, you know. I said, okay. And all the kids are like, yes, yes, in the name of Jesus. Well, yeah. Now the nanny was with us. The nanny was with us, you know, the local lady. We hired 25 local village women. And she came and I was like, okay, your turn. Oh, no. I can't do that. Mm-mm-mm-mm. I said, well, hold on. I says, I went on it. The kids went on it. She goes, well, you understand because you're a white man and voodoo doesn't work on you because you don't believe in it. And I was like, yeah, that's true. We don't believe in it. So therefore, voodoo does not work. And I said, what about your kids? This is black people. This is your relatives, you know, come on. And she goes, oh, that's because he was taught by the white man not to fear it. And I was like, well, how about if I teach you? And she goes, oh, no, I know that it works, therefore I believe. I said, that doesn't even make sense. I said, don't. And so I was like, so the next day I sat down. We have every week we sit down on Tuesday and we get all the nannies together. We talk about various things. And I came up and I said, who here wants to be free from this bondage of sorcery? I can sit down, pray with you. We can do different things. We go through some steps, you know, and you don't have to be in this bondage. And not one person raised their hand. Can you believe that?
They're scared.
They're scared. They're in fear. They're in bondage. And I was like, wow. Wow. You know, and unfortunately, these women are the ones who are actually caring for our children, who are, you know, taken from one event to another. We have a huge schedule, and they have five meals a day, you know, three meals and two snacks. They go to the playground. They go for nature walks. They go to school. They do all this stuff. And so they kind of take them to these various places. They discipline them, different things. But they also, they say little things, and they talk about, you know, gossip about what's happening in the village with all the witches, you know, every monthly there's witches that go and fight against other witches and all kinds of crazy stuff. And how about the fear of this thing that they found, you know? And so, unfortunately, they hear a lot of some of this stuff, and it's probably, some of it has questions to the kids. So, we're a bit concerned about that. They would even come with little blood marks. Just last month, one of our workers has been with us for 8 years, comes with all these blood marks over here. I said, Lizzie, what is this? And she said, oh, that's from the witches. I said, Lizzie, you've been with us for 8 years, from almost the very beginning, and you signed a paper in our policy that says no witchcraft. And I said, what is that? What did you do that for? And she said, well, I went to the clinic. I said I had a pain somewhere in here, my chest pains. It wasn't working, and therefore, and they gave me some pills, didn't work, so therefore I went to the witches. And I was like, ugh. And then she said, well, I said, look, I understand there is some kind of knowledge in the homeopathy, you know, from herbs and stuff, and that's what you guys used basically in the old days before you had doctors. You just went and got herbs and you kind of put it in different places. Well, and I said, in our policy, it says that you would have to tell me to come with you, escort you to this witch doctor, and I would observe everything, and I would stop it before he starts doing some kind of voodoo thing, mojo. But you didn't do that. Not one person up to now has ever taken me to that place. So I said, look, and I really don't want to fire them because I'm just going to get another lady that's going to have the same problems. So I had to sit down and tell, look, this was wrong. Look, the children are going to see all these little cuts and all the stuff that they smeared in there, and they were doing all kinds of shaking voodoo stuff on her. I said, they don't need to see that. So I sent her home for a few days. You know, I said, look, you know, so it's like, you know, there's some challenges. There's challenges there because we are working with people who have no work ethics, who are primitive, people who have no logic or common sense. A lot of that common sense comes from knowledge, okay? Knowledge and experience. But if you're a woman that's out there hoeing the ground every day, right? And then you're just having your baby, you deal with your husband, you make his food, and that's it. That's your life. There's not a whole lot of experience there. There's not a whole lot of knowledge because you never went to school. Okay? And then, which means also logic. There's no logic either because logic is how you perceive things. And how what they perceive is completely different from what we perceive things. How we see things, interpret, and analyze things. When they look at things, they don't see a three-dimensional object that is here. They'll look at here and they'll look at these lines and contour lines and they'll try to figure out what this thing is. If they have never had experience of what this thing was, then they'll try to figure it out and try to analyze it and they'll say it's something else. Kind of like in the Bible, you know, in Ezekiel and Revelation, John, he's trying to describe all this stuff, right? He tried to say, well, it looks like this, it looks like animals, it looks like this. Well, who knows what that was? It's how he perceived what he saw in the visions. Where just recently we had a little girl, well, okay, she's 18 years old, who came from a village. And we have this little special side project that we're doing. And she's actually doing some of the curriculum with the kids. Very difficult, and she failed school horribly. I don't know what she was doing for 18 years in school, but she's down to like second or third grade. We had her do tests on the computer, like diagnostics, and we found out she was actually in like third grade work, but yet she's 18 years old and she was in school the whole time. So I said, okay, we're going to put her in there. So she was doing different things. She does math. She does all this stuff. Logic, she failed and actually said that she was retarded, you know, on the test, that she had special needs. And I was like, oh man, but yet she knows how to do algebra. Is that weird or what? And I was like, wow. And then when we gave her a coloring book to color, it was very difficult for her to understand what these objects were on this coloring book. She looked at it and she just kind of, okay, this looks kind of like a person because of the round thing. Okay, I'll just kind of color that, you know, and not staying in the lines at all, just kind of making a color. She could not understand horizons where the sky and the earth met together, all kinds of things. Maybe a cloud, you know. So a few things she picked out, but it's because she has never done paperwork before. You know, the school books are very difficult to get in Zambia, you know, especially for in a rural school somewhere. They just have chalkboards, you know, they do different things. But to draw pictures and stuff, they never do that. They teach all the children rote system designed by the British, where you just say, okay, today I'm going to tell you what's on the test, and this is the answers. 1 + 1 = 2. You don't need to know what that means, but just say 1 + 1 = 2. Everybody say that.
1 + 1 = 2.
Okay, now you can pass the test. But you don't really understand what that means. No problem solving skills at all. So you can see how what they perceive is completely different. I mean, sometimes we have a video for all the kids. They've seen Toy Stories and Star Wars and all that stuff. They know everything. They all want to be Jedis when they grow up. But I'm wondering, I sit there, sometimes I look back and I see all the nannies sitting there going, okay, looking at this thing. What is actually going in there? You know, what do they actually see when they watch something like that? It just, just a lot of fast moving objects, you know, because they have nothing to relate it to. Because they can't perceive it. They have no logic, you see? So there are some challenges there. A lot of challenges. And we are making progress, you know? So let's get back. Let's go back to we had the roof come off. We fundraised. A lot of churches pitched in. We put the roof back on. It was great and terrific. We also did upgrading. So we just didn't put the same thing on. We took off the old stuff and all the wood, the trusses. We put metal trusses up there. Beams, we put pipes on the outside holding the whole thing down. Ah! So we're waiting for the big bad wolf to come in and try to huff and puff, and it's not going to blow down. And so it was the Lord's will. We needed an upgrade anyways. The iron sheets that we got, you know, 10 years ago when we built this thing, at the time the availability of iron sheets was very difficult. It was very thin, and it was just regular steel. Yeah, I mean, iron steel is actually not really galvanized steel. They say it's galvanized, but it's not really. I think they dip it or spray it on or something like that. So after like some years, you start getting a little bit of rust there. It starts rusting through. So we already had leaks all over the place in the dining room. So it was kind of the Lord kind of said, okay, you need a new roof here. You know. So I think the devil had some work, or I was allowed to do something, or I don't know how that all works. Anyways, all I know is that we did an upgrade on everything. We redid the whole toilet area, which was good. We needed an upgrade. We added even more toilets and actually another shower. So that was really good for us. And you can see that was all the upgrade that we did. So we're back to our square one. Now we have now started working on the girls' room. And because the girls, they were all kind of like in this little bitty small room. And their feet were hanging off of the bunk beds. Because those women, they grow. You know, you feed them, they grow. And they were like, whoop. I said, okay, we got to change this because we had small, mini bunk beds. So we built this little girl's cottage over to the side. A little small thing, but it's just a bunk house. That's all it needs because everything else is there all over the place. So we built this thing strong, you know, with the same materials, all metal, everything. And we made full-size bunk beds. Really happy. It's over to the side across from the schoolroom. It's really, really good. And we actually need to build another one for the boys. Because where they are currently is like a big house that we made. And we actually want to turn that into a missionary's house for our managers that the Lord's going to send us, Lord willing. So maybe from this church, I don't know. But so if you feel the call, we're going to kind of renovate that little house. You know, it's a small house, but we'll put a little kitchenette and a little toilet, and we'll just fix it all up, you know, and everything. So, but we need to build another little cottage just like that that girl's cottage. And, you know, and so that's what we need to do. That's a future project that we need to do soon. We also, you saw the schoolroom. We have a great schoolroom now for everybody, but you have these two grades together. And they're all sitting there singing their little songs and trying to read out loud, and it kind of conflicts with the other kids who are second, third grade. They're trying to do their homework, and so we put a big piece of plastic, and that doesn't help, you know. So Well, so you saw Amy talking there, how we're now expanding. All we have now is just to put the roof. So we're lacking about $3,000 to finish putting that roof on. And then, of course, the plastering around like that and put some linoleum down for the kids. So, and then we'll have to get these little desks for the children. They're going to swing around all the way around. That's according to the ACE program, the Auxiliary Christian Education, and they have a scoring key in the middle. So we're going to be also trying to finish that and do that this year when I get back. So Lord willing, if the Lord provides, we can get that money and finish that schoolroom. And eventually there's even, maybe next year, there's even one more schoolroom behind that one. We already did the slab for it. And that's going to be for science projects and art, you know, so we have little easels for all the kids that are going to be painting and stuff. Because you can't do that in the schoolroom. It's real messy. And all the clay and all that stuff. So we need a room where they can do all those kind of things. So because we need to do extracurricular activities. You know, after they finish all the writing and all that stuff, they need to start doing other things besides their exercise time too. And that's how this curriculum works. You need to add things to it. So we're excited. That's a lot of our projects. And then you look at the last project that we're doing or have done this year is the farm project. We at our farm, we, you know, because the orphanage is only on 1 acre. 1 acre of land. And I have houses all over that place. It's just full. You can build maybe one more boys' cottage in one little space, and that's it. It's full. There's no place more to do it. So, and the chief said he's not going to give us any more land. And so I said, okay. So we found this thing, 1 hour south. It's titled land. We're almost finishing transferring everything in my name. And that's about almost close to even about 100 acres of land. It has a nice little mountain you saw there. Has a river that runs right to the backside of it. And there's the main road right there. So my land's right there on the roadside, right in there in the river. And it's a beautiful little piece of land. It has beautiful palm trees all over the place, Brassus palms. But there we started first doing all the agriculture. We got a greenhouse you saw. It's really good for the tomatoes. We have 500 tomato plants growing inside of that thing because during the rainy season, tomato plants cannot get rain because they start having blight and all that stuff. And so this is really important to have that going there. And plus, this is out in the jungles. So there's lots of bugs and locusts and all kinds of stuff that come along. So it's good that we keep that safe. And the reason why we started to use tomatoes is because that's the highest cash crop there is in Zambia. Those Zambians, they love tomatoes. Can't get enough of them. And so that's why we decided, let's go ahead and do tomatoes. And then for the real estate that you have, it's better to do that because you get the most money out of that one little square than doing like a cabbage or lettuce or something. Cabbages sell for $1 or something. Whereas a tomato plant, you can get a whole box of tomatoes out of one plant through its whole season. We're using a special Israeli type of tomato plant that's actually 9 to 10 feet tall. They're called tomato trees. And the season of the whole thing is about 8 months. So it's really, really nice. And we have a drip irrigation system, so we don't waste water, and it goes directly right on the plant. And we have a solar panels. You saw me adjusting those solar panels. That goes to a solar pump that's in the river. It brings it up, goes into a little small tank. I open it up, goes right into there. It's really nice, very efficient. I'm really excited about that. And Lord willing, I think we will be getting another greenhouse. Every year, I would like to keep continuing getting more greenhouses because each greenhouse, each week, we get 5 crates of tomatoes. We consume 1 crate of tomatoes per week. So that means 4 we can sell to the village. And depending if we're in any season or dry season, the price fluctuates massively. It triples in the rainy season because everybody else can't grow it. So we're going to get one greenhouse every single week. I mean, every single year. And we also, that takes care of all our tomatoes. And also we have the orchard. Orchard have oranges, lemons, tangerines, guavas, moringas, all these different things that we have growing there, 110 trees. Beautifully, we're on our 3.5, almost 4 year, fourth year now. So we have some trees are about this tall. Our guavas have already started producing fruits. And once it starts producing a lot, we're going to have a lot of fruit. And that's really important, and it's really difficult to get fruit in Zambia. They're just not a fruit people. So we're going to get all those fruits and baskets and whatever we have surplus of, we are going to sell to the local markets. And there's plenty of market for it. We have a banana grove that we had done this year. We're now getting about our eighth month, or a seventh to eighth month now. 350 banana trees. They're huge. There's this big now, actually. It just goes on and on and on. My worker and I, Peter, we went to a professional banana farm in the Copper Belt, and we got trained for how to grow those. So we came back, and we're implementing those type. And we have two different types of bananas, the giant Cavendish and the Williams. Really nice, and they have bunches of bananas this big. That's going to be good. I mean, we're going to have bananas going on our ears. But we can always sell those also, and we can pick them a little bit green and age them in our pantry. Groundnuts, we'll call them peanuts. We have whole fields of peanuts, which is really good for protein, for the kids for snacks. We have also sweet potatoes that are growing, actually intercropping on those. That's great. So we're doing a lot. We have a lot of things going on, and this year we're going to be going into papayas. That's going to be great. So I want to have everything growing. This is going to be Garden of Eden. I want it all because you just can't find it. And if you do find it in a store that is 2 hours south of us and potholes and trying to get there and everything, it's all wilted and it's all flobby and very expensive because, you know, Zambia produces nothing. It doesn't make anything except they dig some copper out of the ground. That's their GDP for the whole country. But everything else has to be brought in from South Africa or other countries, Zimbabwe and other things. So I want to make sure I can grow all that. And every time I make more and more of all these different crops, I can sell it. Our goal is to become self-sufficient, right? We want to be able to produce everything and make enough money locally so that we can, in turn, take all that money and pay more workers. Right now we pay $2 a day for each one of our workers, sometimes $3, depending on the exchange rate. And that's good for the village. And so that's what we're doing. That's why we can have 25 workers. And that gives us a really good ratio for the children. I forgot the ratios, but anyways, we have social welfare that comes often to check on us. So it was nice, and we have a really high standard. So now you heard about the farm and the growing. You saw that guardhouse that we have in the front, all made with earth bagging system, really good system. Solid 16 inches, bulletproof, you know. But that is to control the villagers coming into our farm because, you know, it's a small village way out in the bush. And when I first started going there and I started planting all my stuff, I had 100 villagers, 100 coming out there and just sitting. Let's see what the white man's going to do today. And I was like the TV. They turned me on. And I would just say, Oh, wait, he moved right over there, didn't he? He did something there. And so it's like it became very uncomfortable. We bring volunteers out there, and they would look at us, and it's like, Tom, is this normal? Yeah, I said, yeah, that's normal. Just let them stare, you know. And he's, oh, I'm going to stare back. And I said, don't try it. They'll do it for an hour, and you'll have a staring contest. Eventually, yeah, they'll give up, and they'll go, oh, nothing happened, you know. So they'll go home and stuff. But it's like it's something you have to get used to. And now for us, been there, you know, we've been there a couple years now working on the farm. And less people and less come. Sometimes you end up with maybe 20, 30 people only. So, and especially when I come, all these people come out of the woodwork. So I was like, oh man, they're just coming. What, you know, and they'll get like 50 people sometimes. They all want jobs. They all want help because there's no cash. There's no cash anywhere in the whole village. And they just grow enough food just for their family for the year, and that's it. So if they can get some cash, that's great, you know, more for their families. So that we talked about the farm, we have the guardhouse there that is going to restrict all those hundreds of people coming in. And I made them a nice little road over to the left-hand side, kind of off my property, and go all the way down to the river so that they have their little space. And I said, so they won't think, oh, there's a big white man coming, take it over, pushing everybody away so you can't have water to the river. No. I made them a nice path all the way down. And one thing that we're trying to fundraise this year is to make a pump house. Four different organizations came in to try to drill in the area for this village. And all they kept on hitting is all these rocks and all these boulders and breaking their bits and everything. They cannot go down and get water at all. So they all left. So the villagers, what do? They go down to the river and they do everything the river, you know, and wash their clothes, they drink, they go to the bathroom, they drink, and then they get diarrhea and bilharzia and all kinds of other sociostasis and all this stuff, and then they end up going to the clinic and getting, you know, antibiotic pills, and they just have this vicious cycle that keeps going round, 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 and which is really bad. And so I said, let me build a nice little pump house, a little filter house, a little small thing with maybe a storage tank, and that will be my gift to the village people. And they need clean water, you know. Now, this is a very expensive system because it's river water. I went and took the water sampling, took it down to the capital, got it tested, and it said it's full of bacteria, even fecal bacteria. Do not drink this. You'll have diarrhea. And I was like, oh, man. So we have to go get it. He said we have to get a sand filter, like a swimming pool filter. Then you have to go through two other filters, like these little charcoal ones. And then you have to go through a chlorinator. You have to put these giant pills that you have to replace every 3 months. And then go through a giant long UV tube. And but all that takes electricity. You have no electricity on the farm, so we'll have to get solar panels. So all that is about $6,000. I was like, goodness mercy, $6,000? But then you look at it, you say, well, this is going to save lives. This is going to be a good PR thing for the whole village that we're giving safe, clean drinking water. It's really important. And so that's one of the things we're fundraising for also, is to build this thing for the villagers. And I would maintain it, you know, because you have to change out those pills, these chlorinators, and the rod, the light only lasts 1 year. The mercury gets used up. So, because that kills everything, that UV thing. It just kills it all. But we figured out a system. I sat down with these organization, and we had these solar panels, battery backup, all this kind of stuff. So that's one thing that we're going to be doing this year. If we can't fundraise, get enough money of it, we'll just make like the foundation. We'll just start on it, making the little pump house and everything. So that's really good. So yeah, we talked about the farm. We talked about the orphanage. We talked about the kids. Running out of time now. I think we have 5 minutes. So let me open up the floor for question and answers. Okay, Q&A.
I know that in South Africa, the farmers are getting murdered at a pretty good rate. Is that happening around where you are?
No. Because there's this movement going on for the past, I don't know, 20 years or something, starting first with Zimbabwe, with Mugabe, where he's under this impression that the imperialists have taken over and all the farms belong to white people. So he kicked every single white person out of Zimbabwe. Mugabe's a bad news guy. And he did so much, he even kicked out all the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, and even Red Cross. He just had everybody out. And all the black people just came and took over the farms. And they were the producing breadbasket of the whole continent. They produced everything. It was the best and beautiful country ever. Now it's the worst. Their economy is so bad. They had their bills were this long with a trillion of their Zimbabwe dollars. And they couldn't even fit enough zeros on it. And they even had an expiration date on the bill. Finally, they switched to using American dollars, which is crazy because he hates America. So, but when you go there using them, I don't know how they got American dollars, but they do. And now their dollars are just like droopy, you know, like these little flabby things, you know, because they only started with like $1 billion or something. And now it's just like, when you go to the store, they just kind of hand you these like dollars that are just like completely used. But, it destroyed the whole country. Of course, the local people didn't have the capital to start the farms back up. They sold all the tractors. They sold everything. So now they produce absolutely nothing, which is crazy. And, they owned the farms. It's all turned back to the black people, but you can't do that. none of the banks will invest. It was a bad decision. Anyways, so that's that. Now, South Africa, we had this dude, Nelson Mandela, and a lot of people say a lot of good things about him. Okay, yeah, he did a lot of things. Yeah, he was in prison, but he's good friends with Mugabe, and I know a lot of inside stuff that the media does not tell you. And that is that he came in, he had meetings with Mugabe. He says, how are we going to do this? We want to kick out all the white people out of South Africa. And Mugabe said, well, it's not going so well for me. So this is what you're going to do. You're going to do it politically correct, so we have the international community to stand with you. So what you're going to do is you go in as a hero. You're now, you know, putting all the blacks back into power. And what you're going to do is you're going to tell the farmers okay, we would like our land back because we were here first. But we're going to tell you that you have to sell it to us. And we'll buy the land from you, what we think the land is worth, maybe $1, $2, something like that. So right now, that's what they do. They'll go, just pick a farm randomly. The government will come in and say, this land maybe costs $5 or something, or whatever it is. But on paper it says, we bought the land from the white farmer. And he's forced by law to give it to him and sell it to him for whatever price they come up with. So that's slowly being done. See, they don't tell you that kind of stuff in the media, and it's really bad. So everybody thinks he's like this thing. Yes, he did suffer. Yes, there was a lot of things that went through. But the underlying thing is it's still happening. It's exactly what it is. And so all the farms are slowly going. So a lot of people from South Africa are now moving to Zambia. They're opening these huge farms, and Zambia is very welcoming. They love development. So they just opened the floodgates. Yeah, everybody come. We want everybody to come in. So right now, within just 2 years, we had 6 malls being built. Boom. So there's a lot of money being poured into Zambia right now. It's a good time to be in Zambia. Lots of infrastructure, lots of people, lots of foreigners. Because before, I could go down, walk down the street, and I know every single white person that was walking down there. Hey, Bob. Hey, yeah, what's going on? How are you? Now, there's like, 100,000 white people walking around. So it's like... So that kind of answers your questions. What's happening in South Africa?
That's like 12 hours away from where you guys live.
The capital. Yeah. Yes, but South Africa is, there's this thing going on, and it's unfortunate that it's happening, but eventually they're gonna see that it's gonna be a problem. It has the highest crime rate in the entire world. A lot of hate crimes going on, so it's just gonna get worse, worse, and worse, and worse. So that's the future of South Africa, but it's not affecting us. Because there is no imperialist, there was no big presence of white people before. The British were there for a short period of time, and they just handed Zambia to the people. There was no fight, no skirmishes, nobody died in getting the country. So it's different, So any other questions?
Do you have people living on the farm?
We have the head man, which was actually his property. He's right at the edge of the property, kind of like on the border. And he's the one, I hire 4 people for the farm. He takes care of the whole greenhouse. He's an old guy, he's just kind of like this. And he works on his little tomatoes, tying the little strings, and I give him a little something for doing that. I have another person looking after the orchard. It's huge, it's a big thing. So he goes around, during the dry season, he waters all the trees. And during the rainy season, we have grass there, and it grows. We have that elephant grass. It grows 10 feet tall. So if you don't take care of it and cut it down, you won't even see the orchard. It's going to be completely engulfed. And then all these bugs come along and eat up all your stuff. So he has this little slasher. We call him a slasher. It's like a long machete with a little bent on the end of it. And he just goes like this. I got a mower one time, a couple years back, and I started mowing that whole area. It lasted 3 months. That elephant grass just tore it up. The engine just blew up, and I was like, it doesn't work at that elephant grass. It is thick stuff. So I'm looking at some industrial type of mowers I'm trying to get, thick blades and giant bicycle wheels and So that I have another guy working on that, and then I have a couple more who are building the guardhouse and a few other things. So, yeah. But eventually, our goal is to start creating a future orphanage for the older kids at the farm. See, that's the future of Terra Nova. It's not just agriculture. It's also going to be an orphanage for the older kids. Because our place, remember, it's only 1 acre. We have a little small play area. But all the toys and all those kind of things I built is for small kids. These kids are getting big, they're growing up. They need a field. They need a soccer field. They need a basketball court. They need, all those kind of things. And on the farm, we also have a little river. So I've already got 2 or 3 canoes so they can go canoeing up and down like this. And they have plenty of space to run around. We're going to try and make a little small swimming pool there, So we're fixing to make a building for the older kids. Hopefully in the future, within 3 years, we can get this manager couple in here, become part of our team, maybe lifers if possible, which is, and I know it's impossible, but God, that's where God's going to do a miracle. And we're going to, those people are going to come stay at the orphanage, take over that whole area. Then Amy and I can transfer into Terra Nova, where I can also supervise, continue building more stuff there. And I can bring over the oldest 8 children. Those children will come over here. Amy will be doing the school with the kids, also administration. And we'll still, once a week, come back to the orphanage, just an hour, bring all the fruits and vegetables, everything to the school and to the orphanage. And we'll also be doing all the payrolling and all that stuff. So it's not, we're not abandoning the place. We'll do all the administration. But we're growing so fast that we need help. Okay? And if the Lord's calling you, you need to take up that torch and come and volunteer. Okay? Yeah, it's rough and it's tough, but God's going to bless you. So anyway, so that's the future. Within 3 years, we really need to, 3 to 4 years, we're going to have 14, 15-year-old kids. And they need that space. They'll be doing the homework in the morning. Maybe they'll work on the farm a little bit. Then they go around doing other various activities there, And I'm going to be doing landscaping this year to create that whole area. The whole first area is going to be about an acre wide. It's going to even have the theme of like Adobe, Santa Fe kind of a look, beautiful Mexican kind of look, really nice, because I can make it out of the same earth bagging system with plastering nicely around corners and stuff. So it's going to be a nice little place there. So that's what we're going to use. And it's a lot cheaper. It's all made out of clay. And we have plenty of that in that one area. So that's the future of that. So we'll be actually staying there eventually. So I'm shaking the trees and seeing what's going to happen, Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Okay, you were saying a 50% age rate. What's
yes.
What's that doing to the reproduction of the population? I mean, is it in negative numbers?
No, they're still having babies. One guy has, a lot of them have mistresses, or they have 2 or 3 wives, So that's one of the reasons why they have such a high HIV rate. Now, officially in their statistics, it's only like 20% or something. But I know it's a whole lot more because they don't want to scare people away. But if they have kids, only 1 in 3 will retain the mother's HIV AIDS. Because when it becomes 16 weeks, the thyroid gland of the baby starts producing its own antibodies and will actually flush out the AIDS virus. And they actually reverse. It's really weird because you can take a sample of their blood when they're first born. Oh, they're positive. Oh, no, no. Then 16 weeks later, if you give it proper nutrition, love, and all that stuff, then all of a sudden it reverses. They'll become negative. And you're like, how's that happening? And so at the early times when we didn't understand that, all the church was like, it's a miracle. God healed the baby, But there's a little bit of science in there involved too. But we'll give the glory to God. But only 1 in 3 actually retain the HIV AIDS. So, and the ones that do get have AIDS, we actually have one child out of our 30 kids who has HIV. And he takes this little bitty pill twice a day for the rest of his life. Okay, or until they find a cure. And if he stops taking this pill, then his CD4 count starts changing and it'll go all the way down to like 10 or 20. You're supposed to have 2,000 at all time in your bodies. But it'll go all the way down. So if he catches a cold, it could be devastating for him. He could die. And one time at the clinic, didn't have any ARVs, antiretroviral, blah, blah. And he started having a cough. And I was like, oh, goodness mercy, this is scary. So I went and we found it somewhere else. So he just has to keep it. And it keeps his everything, the viral load, super small, where he's not even contagious anymore. But it's still there. It won't go away. So, but anyways, so you can see even when kids are born, it can be managed. And it's free. ARV is free. All healthcare in Zambia is for free. A lot of it's paid for by, different organizations. We're in, and the United Nations, World Vision, all these things. So we get that free medical, but it's not like super good medical care. You have to go to a private place to get good care. So, any more questions? We're about ending. Going? Oh, yes?
Isn't that water system that you might want to set up in the village, will they be able to maintain it?
I will. Yeah. I will maintain because I'm going to be there. I go there twice a week to the farm, especially when I start living there in 3 years. I'll be there. It's just the end of my property, which is about 500 feet maybe over to the left-hand side. And I'll be going there, checking on the chlorinator. Like every 3 months, you have to change out in the UV once a year. So I'll be doing that. I'll fundraise for those two things, but I'll also be checking on everything. And we'll make it super strong so nobody can steal all that stuff, you know, put locks on anything. So, and we'll have somebody kind of also watching it. But that's going to revolutionize the whole area, having clean, safe water. And that's a really good PR thing with the government and myself. I said, look what I did. And they're like, wow. Because the white man right now has kind of a bad rap of going into areas, a resort or something like that there. So they're really sensitive about places next to the river. Because all the people, they put these giant walls everywhere, and there's no access for them to get their water or to go fishing. So I made sure that was my number one PR relations with the villagers. I sat down with all the villagers, there was like 1,000 of them, and I had to explain all this stuff, you know, because they're freaking out that this white man's coming. But the good thing is that nobody was on the land. I didn't find out until just recently, last month, is because they think that land's cursed. So I said, and I was like, thank you, Jesus, for saving this area. They said somebody put some juju somewhere in the ground and nothing grows there and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And the headman wants me to go get a powerful witch from the Congo to come and do some jujus to fight the jujus there. And I'm like, no, we're not going to do that. You know, that's not really biblical. And I don't believe in that. So I'm thinking about, just because there's all these rumors going on, I want to bring a bunch of pastors going there. And praying over the land and dedicating the land to Christ. Yeah, just go around and doing all this stuff. And whatever they do, make sure it's a big show and have the whole village there so they know it's been cleansed, you know. So they won't have these preconceived ideas or whatever it is, you know. Because some of our volunteers who stayed in tents there, they didn't follow our instructions. Like, you need to sleep under a mosquito net. Don't drink the water in the river. They did it anyways, all that stuff, and they got sick. And they had to go to the clinic and put an IV in there with a drip, and you know. And they said, see, it's cursed, you know. And I was like, no, it's because they disobeyed our instructions. Amy and I are seasoned missionaries. We know what we're doing. We know stuff, you know. Listen to us, you know. So I got to deal with that when I get back, because they're really concerned about it. I was like, don't worry, I'm going to deal with it. Okay, I think we're pretty much done. So two things. One, that we need volunteers. We need managers. Even if you want to come out for a few weeks, that's fine. But if you want to come forever, that's even better. So number two, we're fundraising. We need $3,000 to put that roof on. So those are the two things that we're requesting for the church. Okay? So if the Lord touches your heart, it's going to be a super blessing to help us this year. Okay.
This is always fantastic, and we appreciate so much.